Hi, this is Paul Majors from Los Angeles. Happy birthday, WCCO Radio, 80 years old.
And happy birthday, Mr. President.
Happy birthday.
Wipeout!
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Baby.
Some radio stations never grow up. Most listeners do. Welcome to the real world.
15 minutes before 5 o'clock, 15 minutes left to go on this revisit of the legendary Cannon Mess. Steve Cannon back here after a 7-year absence, 26 years, and a wonderful career. And if we were to open up the phone lines, and I'm not going to do that, but if we were to open up the phone lines right now, we could stay on the air for the next year just taking fond memory phone calls from people who say, Cannon, you are missing the point. You weren't just a radio personality we listened to. You were part of the fabric of our lives. You were the sound that is, in the same fashion, the smell of burning leaves affects the oral senses. That when you smell burning leaves, it takes you to another place. And that's why I wanted you to have all of the time you possibly could have on the air for one reason, not just to give you that opportunity, but to give this audience the opportunity to hear and enjoy and feel all of those things all over again that they felt for all of those years, that the sound of your voice elicits.
A lot of people that reminisce with me, I mean strangers, what they mention most of the time is like if they've been on a Sunday trip or over a weekend, you know, where they say Labor Day, and now they're coming back, but I'm on the air on Monday. And when they hear my voice, they know they're home. Or if they've even been on a trip to Florida and they come back. They used to say, then we knew you were home, because our signal was big, too. They could pick you up maybe a couple hundred miles away, you know, or maybe further. I must tell you and our audience that we had, I see Jimmy Erickson isn't here right now watching the show, but he was my producer and the engineer. And one of the things that happened to me that final year, you know, I cuss a little bit every once in a while, you know, but I never, ever got caught on the air until that final year.
Hmm.
I was signing off before a Twins game, say like at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. Have I got time for this?
Sure.
And I was about to sign off. We're going into my theme, and all of a sudden, I can't hear the theme. I can't hear Jimmy. I don't know what's going on. So I press what I think is the intercom to talk off of the air with Jimmy, okay? But I press the mic, and I said over my... Finally, the theme came on, and I was exasperated. I said, Jimmy, what the effenheimer is going on around here? And he started shaking like this. He was shaking his hands like, shut up. I said, did you hear me, Jimmy? What the effenheimer is going on here? And my theme song is under there. And finally, I shut it off, and I signed off, okay? So Jimmy decided to be kind. He didn't even tell me that I goofed up. That went over the radio. I go to the Twins game. I walk over there. I walk in, and I go down to the media room to eat. And they have the monitor on to CCO all the time in the media room. And it's all guys in there, okay? It's all filled up with guys. I walk in, and they all stood up, and they all said, that was one effenheimer of a show, Steve-O. I said, what are you saying? And then they told me. I never realized it. But evidently it got out there, did it, Jim? Yeah, Jimmy said it got out there, but anyway.
That's one he taped that he didn't send to you.
Okay.
Sid's on the phone. You want to talk to Sid for a couple of minutes?
Okay.
Hey, Sidney, this is Don Shelby on CCO, and this is the Cannon Mess.
Mr. Cannon.
Sidney. Oh.
How are you?
Wife, it's my old buddy.
Here's my hero.
What did I used to call you? Oh, you're the Oracle. It's the Oracle, folks.
Yes.
He gave me that close personal friend deal.
Yeah, I started that for you, didn't I?
At that Sports Churro show, you would introduce it.
Yep.
One of his close personal friends.
Yep. Sidney, how are you feeling?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Boy, you sound good on the air again. Boy.
Well, thank you.
I'm not saying Shelby should be replaced, but it's a fine, kind of place for you, I'll tell you that.
No, it's over for me, and Don's doing a terrific job. And Sid, I still love your column.
Thank you, sir.
And it's just excellent. I turned to it immediately, unless I have to check a score quickly that I didn't get, then I go right to your column.
Yeah.
And you're writing just as good as ever. You're still the most famous sports writer in America.
Hardest working, too.
And hardest working. You still got the listed number in the phone book?
No, sir.
Oh, you took that out. Well, I hope you have many, many more years, Sid. I don't get to see you anymore, but are you still going down to the east coast of Florida?
Once in a while.
Uh-huh.
Are you in town for a few days?
No, just today. Just today, in another 10 minutes, and then I'm done.
You going to Florida?
No, not yet. I won't be going until maybe... It depends on how the Vikings are doing. If they start losing, I'm out of here. But if they keep winning, I'm staying. I can catch them on TV down there. You know, I go into a sports bar and I watch their games. But it's not like being up here.
I'm calling you next week to have lunch.
Okay, very good.
Hey, Sid, I know you have a great and respectful relationship and great respect for Steve. But the relationship between you and Morgan was a little bit strained from time to time. How do you feel about Morgan?
You want to hear the best story of all?
What?
Steve walks in one day, and Calvin Griffith is sitting there. And I'm having lunch, a dinner with him, and Steve walks in. He says, "Is that Morgan Mundane in here?" He says, "I want to smack him right in the stomach. I can't take him anymore."
Oh, yeah.
Calvin, he was here a few minutes ago and left. What did you tell me?
Well, Calvin Griffith.
He hated Morgan.
Yeah. Sid, you must be. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, I'm in a car. Yeah.
Oh yeah, because you're breaking up.
And, all right.
Okay, so I'll give me a call. We'll go to lunch.
I'll call you next week.
All right. Thanks. That was Sidney Hartman, the Oracle. Calvin Griffith. I really like Calvin.
Yeah.
Baseball man. Went through terrible times in Washington where they made no money. Came here. They had some success until. The player started getting a lot of money. He couldn't afford him, et cetera, et cetera. But he really really disliked him. One quick story.
Sure.
Gaylord Perry, Cleveland.
Yeah.
1977.
Used to throw a spitball.
All right. They're a contender in 77. They got some really nice players. Larry Heisel, the young fellow Lyman Bostock, who died, was shot.
That's right.
Et cetera. But they need pitching. They've always needed pitching in those days. So he's on the block, Gaylord Perry. So Morgan gets on my show and he says, "Calvin, Griffith, listen to me. Open letter to you. Open up your pocketbook. Let the moths out. Make the trade or just buy Gaylord for money. Okay?" Signing off, Morgan Mundane. Now I come to the game. Our booth for the radio guys who weren't working the game next to Calvin's. He sees me. He's sitting in there with Joe Cronin, president of the American League. His entourage, and he's waving at me, "Calvin, get in here, get in here." So I come in. He said, I heard that Morgan Mundane," he said. He had that kind of southern accent. He said, "And you tell Ed Morgan that I'm not hiring Gaylord Perry. I'm not buying him because he's washed up. But I got a young kid down in Toledo who's going to come up here and show everybody." And I can't think of this kid's name when he came up. He lost to the Yankees 2-0, was the biggest crowds they've ever had out there. But he didn't do well after that, see. So now, I'm leaving. I said, "I'll tell Morgan." It was an air door that closes slowly.
Right.
Joe Cronin says, "Who was that?" Morgan says, "That was Steve Cannon." "What does he do?" "He's a radio guy, really good guy. But that partner of his, Morgan Mundane, is a real jerk." And the door closed. One other time, Calvin came in, and I was eating in the media room. And Morgan had made some cracks about Calvin again. He came back, and he says to me, "Steve-O, you tell that buddy yours, Morgan Mundane, I'm taking away his media card. He's going to pay the games, and he's not eating in here no more." And out he walked. I swear to you.
And you always had a respectful relationship with Calvin.
Yes.
But Morgan was just ripping.
I know.
I don't blame Calvin for having an attitude about Morgan.
I don't either.
Because Morgan tells it like it is sometimes.
That's right.
You know, and he has an attitude. Now, you've had relationships not only with Cal Griffith, but going back as far as you go in this market back to 1952, some of the fabulous people that you've met and that you've been associated with. If you could go back and meet those people who've gone to the great beyond or some who are still here, and you could have one final show again, and that show would be a four-hour show, who would you have as guests on that show? And I know this is tough to throw at a guy right now, but if you start with one, maybe some others will come to you. But the people, whether they were national figures, political figures, dead or living, if you could do a show all over again and it would be the show that would last forever in the canon of Steve Cannon's mess, who would you have?
Well, among sports guys, I'd have the Woogster, Doug Woog.
Yeah.
For a coach.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back a long time. I'd have Dave Moore.
Yes, of course.
For sure. Because I used to do some funny things with him, and if he wasn't listening, he'd do news headlines over here for my show, you know, and they'd record him first, and he'd muff a line, and he'd go, "Gosh, I'll get out. I don't know what I can't talk." You know, and so I said, "Save all those outtakes," because he was so emotional, you know.
Yeah.
So then I'd set it up, you know. Well, Dave Moore's going to be with us pretty soon. Dave, I heard, I watched your news last night, and you had a real boo-boo there on that story about the outlaws that entered that bar. I don't know what I was thinking of, you know. I'd play one of those outtakes that had nothing to do with that story. You know? Yeah. We just had more fun with those. Another thing was, years ago, on Friday nights, I used to go up to the third floor of Harry's, which is my all-time favorite restaurant and bar. If I got time, it was over on 11th, across from Orchestra Hall. Doesn't exist. It burned down. We'd go up to that. It was an old speakeasy years ago, and they had three floors, and a bunch of us would go up, and we'd play Liar's Dice for drinks up on the third floor.
Yeah.
And then also we'd do sports trivia. And we'd always load the deck against Dave. And then he had to buy a round. He's such a sweet guy. So gullible, you know. Sometimes he'd have to pick up about three rounds. You know, we were cheating.
And he never tumbled to it.
Oh, no. Well, we'd tell him afterwards, you know. But
you'd get him next week.
We'd get him next week, you know. He was so good-natured. And what a talent. And, you know, being a radio guy, you know, the thing is, you guys don't move your heads anymore on TV. When I first started on television, I was shaking my head just like radio guys do. And I was holding my script up when I did the sports. I did weekend sports, you know. I was the number two guy, got 2 minutes. And I'd hold it up here, and Mr. Hubbard, he was the originator of that Channel 5. He'd tell Bill McGovern, who was driving him crazy, see, "You tell Cannon he's not on radio, he's on television. Put that script down. Don't pick it up." I couldn't help it. I was so used to doing it, I kept doing it. And he was constantly telling McGivern, and finally McGivern says, "Do it. Because otherwise he's coming down here, and that could be big trouble."
Ooh.
So,
because that's old Stanley.
Yes. And I admired him, though, however. He was a real pioneer and so forth and so on. But anyhow, I finally got over that habit because it was from radio. And the guy that really doesn't move is the man that does Nightline. You ever notice that?
It's like Ted Koppel.
I mean, he doesn't even blink.
Right.
You know what? That would be good training for golf, for putting, because you don't want to move your head, right? You should be a good putter.
Koppel doesn't have any yips.
Yeah, he'd never have the yips. Well, you don't move either. Got 1 minute. We got to sign it off, babe.
Here's what I want to know. Jumpin' Joe Jonkas was the engineer today. How was he?
Maybe adequate.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How about Jimmy Erickson as the producer extraordinaire?
I'd give Jimmy marvelously adequate.
Now, we've got Lindsay Peterson as the studio coordinator celebrating his very last day in studio, and he wanted to make sure that he did it with you as his final salute to this job, because he's moving up as the assistant program director. How'd he do?
Lindsay, he's going to sign my checks because he's the assistant program director. This guy is fabulously adequate. And I want to tell you something right now. Today, I didn't get the money.
This has been the Cannon Mess on WCCO.
Thanks for inviting me, Don. It's your show, And you're doing great.
And it's been my pleasure.
Okay, man.
Thanks, Steve.